Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday night. Friday, July the 17th, 2026. 12 coming up on 13 minutes past the hour. Glad to have you with us tonight. Tonight, Matt is actually on vacation, but he did tape a show before he left. So tonight at 10:15, there will be a program, a new episode of Matt's program coming up at 10:15 tonight. So don't miss that. But joining us here in the studio, I'm glad to say, is the current Democratic candidate for the House seat in the 86th District. He was with us at the Marion County Fair. So glad to have him in tonight. Kent Halloran. Kent, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Scott?
Doing well. How are things on the campaign trail?
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, I wish I had a portable air conditioner I could take with me everywhere I go, because some of these outdoor events, I was at Third Thursday yesterday, and I'll tell you what, I think most of the time after about a half an hour, people were just talking to about 250 pounds of baked ham. Yeah. It was brutal, especially this haze, this smoke from Canada is horrible.
What do you make of this? I mean, we've had this before, but I've never seen it impact people like this has.
I wish I could answer that question. I mean, we had it a few years ago, but it seemed to come and go, and now this one really seems to be lingering. And I know they're talking about the air pollution advisory might be lifted by tomorrow, hopefully, but that I think is due more to the rain they're expecting.
Maybe that's what it was, because I remember the smoke, what was it, 24, 23, somewhere in there, but I don't remember it being so hazardous for people to go outside. This has been horrible. People are getting very sick if they go outside and having all kinds of problems.
Absolutely, and if the listeners out there, if they have any breathing problems whatsoever, please, please stay inside as much as possible. It is rough out there. I basically told people it's the nice thing about it is it doesn't. If I want to smoke a cigar, I don't have the inconvenience of actually having a cigar. I just go outside and breathe.
You know, when I was coming in here tonight, I couldn't tell if it was going to rain or if it was just this haze. And it obviously was cloudy, but this haze, you couldn't tell.
Yeah, it's all around. It's one big gray. It's encompassing our whole county, and it's just absolutely awful. And again, between the heat and the air pollution, if you do have to go outside, please stay hydrated, and if you have to, wear a mask. I know we've tried to avoid those since the end of the pandemic or the epidemic, but please, please, if you must, wear a good mask to protect your own health.
Do want to remind everybody out there listening, we'll be on for 2 hours tonight. We are live. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, feel free. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If you'd like to call in, ask Ken a question, or get in on any of the topics we talk about tonight. Wanted to talk about the death of Lindsey Graham last week. It's age 71. Not so much for the fact that he has passed away. People have their own feelings on that. But did you find people a little too rough in his death on social media, on programs? They really said some awful things about this guy.
Yeah, I was never a fan of Lindsey Graham, and I did live in South Carolina at one time, and his predecessor was worse, I might add.
Strom Thurmond.
Yes, sir. I had the misfortune of I was a student at Clemson. I was going to grad school at Clemson when we had the groundbreaking for the Strom Thurmond Institute. We had Strom there, and we had...
Oh, how old was he then?
Oh, he was in his 80s. And we also had then Vice President George H.W. Bush. And, of course, my building overlooked the groundbreaking, and so we had, during class, we had two Secret Service men sitting there making sure we weren't taking a pot shot at the future president. I think that people take too much joy. I mean, I guess it's what the German word is, what, Schadenfreude or Schadenfreude?
Schadenfreude.
That's a, yeah.
Yeah.
Where you're having fun at someone else's expense. I think we've got to get over that. I mean, of course we've seen all the memes on there. I think the one meme where, you know, Death was at one of those claw machines and he's pulling out Lindsey Graham and he says, "Wait a minute, I thought I was getting
Mitch McConnell.
Mitch, thank you. I thought I was getting Mitch McConnell and you know that some humor is okay. I mean, but politicians, we've opened ourselves up for that. You're never going to please all the people all the time, as the saying goes. But I think when a politician dies, I think we should just take a moment. You know, whether you agreed with their policies or you didn't agree with them, we just need to take a moment, think of their family, think of their loved ones, and just say, all right, he's gone. Now move forward.
Well, I think the problem here was, I'm not saying anybody has to agree with this man's policies, but he's dead. And he died rather unexpectedly. He was supposed to be on Meet the Press that morning, for God's sake. And he had just gotten back from Ukraine, I think on Friday, died on Saturday. So the fact that people could be that callous, again, you could dislike every policy he ever created. If you don't know the man, that you have that kind of anger in somebody's death, I don't really understand that.
Well, we've over the last 10, 15, 20 years now, we've created a culture of hatred. You know, we can dislike policies, but we've gone from disliking a politician or a party's policies from vehemently hating them. We can't just disagree or agree to disagree. It has to go to hatred. Some of it's just due to pure rhetoric, and you know, it's election year. Everyone has to point the, you know, we don't go just to say, here are the positive things that I propose doing or attempting to do if I'm in office. We have to say, but look at this guy. Look how evil he or she is. And that's got to end. We really do. I mean, if you say the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, the word one country under God, indivisible, does not apply at the moment, in my opinion. But we want to bring it back.
Well, this comes up to the conversation that we were having previous to his death. Mitch McConnell was in the hospital, I think still is in the hospital, recovering from pneumonia. People have talked about Joe Biden's age. People have certainly talked about the current president's age. And I'm not sure. If somebody's elected, I don't understand why that's not the way to take them out. If you don't want them there, don't vote for them. If people want to vote for them, I'm not sure why their age is so relevant.
It shouldn't be. As long as the person has, you know, the mental sharpness to serve in the office that they're running for. Now, again, we need to focus, we the voters, need to focus more on policies than personality. And again, if I agree with you, I've had people ask me about if they like term limits. The problem I have with term limits, among other things, again, term limits is, okay, you're taking away this choice. You know, again, now that's one of the reasons I'm running against someone who is also a non-incumbent, because Tammy was term limited out. But term limits, I don't think the answer. I think the answer is not making voting more difficult, making it less difficult, and making it, I don't want to say making it mandatory. I'm not trying to, I don't want to, you know, go to the stick quite yet, but certainly making it easier for people to vote and getting the information to them. And again, it also comes down to the people. We need to be more aware of what we're voting for before we go to the ballot.
Well, like with Mitch McConnell, you know, everybody's talking about his age and the fact that he's hospitalized, but he is not running for re-election. He is out of there in January, no matter what the condition he's in. And I find it interesting because I do believe the governor would appoint his replacement, would something happen to him. And the governor of Kentucky is a Democrat.
Yes.
So I always wonder when people are critiquing his age, are they doing that because they really think he's just too old for the next 6 months, or would they like to have a Democrat in the Senate for the next 6 months?
I think that comes down to the individual. I think there are Republicans out there who may like or at least respect Mitch McConnell, but again, he's not there voting. And that's the other thing is, again, if he's in the hospital, and I don't know how long he's been in the hospital now, it's been several weeks, and if he's going to stay in the hospital full time, then you know, maybe he should resign. The problem is you're not going to go through a, you know, I don't know if it's an impeachment or what the process would be to remove him. You're certainly not going to do that. And part, he may be just hanging on just so he doesn't get replaced by a Democrat. I don't know what he's thinking, nor do I know what other people are thinking. But again, we talk about, is he healthy enough to do the job? Now, if he's been hospitalized for 3-4 weeks and is going to continue to be hospitalized, well, he's not doing the job.
I just think when somebody tells you to go, that's different than resigning yourself.
Agreed.
If you want to resign, that's okay for health concerns, your health, whatever. But when somebody tells you you need to go, when the voters have put you there, I can understand why that wouldn't be greeted very, very well.
Oh, I understand it, but it's something that I guess I would call on anyone who is in that same position where you are serving the public, you are in elected office, but if you are no longer physically able to, you know, carry out the duties of that office, and again, if you're in a hospital, you know, if I don't know the degree of his hospitalization, obviously I'm not his doctor, but if you don't know the degree of his hospitalization, he and his doctor do, and if he's going to be discharged in a few days or a week and is going to go right back to the Senate and do his job, I'm okay, fine, that's it. That's what he was elected for. But if he can't do that and he's just not resigning because he doesn't want a Democrat to replace him, which, as you pointed out, if I think that's how they do it in Kentucky, is the governor would be choosing his replacement. I have a little bit of a problem with that because he's not doing the job, but he's not willing to let someone else do it.
Well, don't you think there should be some kind of rule? If this is what people want, there should be a hard and fast rule in each state how much time you're able to miss, be away from the office. And also, you know, if it's a Republican seat, no matter what party the governor is, they have to appoint somebody from that party. I think that would solve a lot of this problem.
I think rules like that would, and the challenge you've got there is because the way the Constitution is written, it's like if it's not in the Constitution election wise, then it's up to the states. And so if you do that with one state, it has to be for all of them, because you certainly don't want to have, let's say, the state of California saying, okay, well, if our senator or house rep is the opposite party of the, in this case, it'd be the Gavin Newsom, would be forced to put in another Republican. But then if you do the same thing in Texas, or you don't do the same thing in Texas, then, they don't have a Democratic senator, but if there is a Democratic senator down there and you have a Republican governor and then they put in a Republican, that's not fair then for the states that are doing it right.
Well, it's very interesting to me. Completely different, but not so much in the daylight savings time. You know, now the Congress has voted to get rid of daylight savings time, or keep daylight savings time, and it has to go to the Senate. It doesn't look like it's going to pass the Senate. But if it did, all it does is kick it back to the states. Now, can you imagine how screwed up this country would be if New York decides to keep things the way they are, and we decide to keep daylight savings all the time, and Nebraska decides to keep it the way it is, and California? I mean, how screwed up would this country be?
I'll be honest with you. I lived in Indiana when Indiana was not changing the clock. In other words, when it was Eastern Standard Time, Indiana was on Eastern Standard Time. But when it was Eastern Daylight Time, they were on Central Daylight Time. Indiana didn't change the clocks. If it were isolated like that, it's not that big a deal. Now, you know, if someone's calling from Ohio, calling Indiana from Ohio or Chicago, they might call too early or too late, but it isn't as big a deal. However, if you're going from, you know, in other words, I can remember, driving from Georgia to Louisiana one time. Am I going to be changing my watch 3-4 times as I'm going?
Right.
And that would be the problem. But I think that we shouldn't have the time change, in my opinion. First off, again, there's been studies done as far as, okay, every time you move the clocks forward, they have more accidents and so forth. I don't even know, and I've done a little study on this, I don't even know why we are doing daylight savings time, because even when they studied Indiana at one point they felt that, well, when Indiana goes to daylight savings time, they should save electricity. The whole point being is you need more lights when it gets darker in the evening. Indiana's electrical rates, their use went up. Now, that's not necessarily attributed to just daylight time. It's like everyone now uses more electricity because we have so many more gadgets.
Well, I think one of the problems is that it would be for a certain period of time, I believe November, December, January, February, here in Ohio, daylight would not happen until 8:30. Now, you're going to have kids at bus stops in the dark. Mm-hmm. You're going to have people who are not going to get out of bed, want to get out of bed. You're going to have a lot of problematic things going on in the morning. Senior citizens who can't drive to doctor's appointments in the dark. A lot of people who just can't drive in the dark, period. You're going to create a problem there. And I think that is ultimately one of the big issues.
Well, I think now, if memory serves, they're going to maintain daylight savings time.
Right, which would standard time would make more sense. Now, that would even things out better. But daylight savings time, that's daylight later in the day. You want kids going to school in the dark?
Well, that is one of the reasons why I would much rather go to just daylight standard time, because again, and there was another study done. They talk about the circadian rhythms in the human mind, where as you're waking up and it's bright out or light out early during daylight savings time, somehow that affects the sleep cycle. Again, not my area of expertise, but I would prefer it going to daylight standard time. If they take it one way or the other, as long as we're not changing the clock back, I think I'm happy.
I don't know. I think this is going to be I think it's one of those things where people hear it and they think it's going to be daylight till 7 o'clock all year round, and it won't.
No.
Because then we just have fewer hours of daylight at a certain time of year. And it would still be dark at 5:36 instead of 4:35 in December. But where you're going to notice it, is it's going to be dark until 9 o'clock in the morning.
That's true.
Yeah.
And that would be the one thing I would caution if this does pass, which, as you noted, it likely won't. But if it does pass, I would caution parents to make sure their children have reflective clothing, because that's the only disadvantage that people talk about when it comes to staying with the daylight savings time is in the middle of winter, children are going to be waiting at the bus stop in the dark. And so what I would caution and what I would recommend is that, again, give your child some reflective clothing or something on their backpack that is reflective, and just take steps to make sure they are more visible at night or
now,
in the dark.
Did you hear the president's speech last night?
I did not. I got back from, I was at Third Thursday last night, and I got home. I was exhausted. I got cleaned up and went right to bed.
Well, he seems to feel that China interfered in the 2020 elections. So the internet, the information's on the White House website page if you'd like to look at it. And that was 27 minutes of what he talked about last night.
Well, if he had an ounce of evidence, I would love to see it, and I might go onto the White House website.
A lot of redactions.
I'm sure there are. So, again, I don't understand his obsession with the 2020 election. He's won the last election. By the Constitution, at least as it's been interpreted for me, he is not eligible for a third term. Now there's a movement in Congress to actually make him eligible for a third term. I'm not too certain how they're going to do that. But no, I didn't have a chance to watch the president last night. Like I said, it was a hot time in the old town last night, I'll tell you.
I don't know. I think it's interesting that he would give a speech in regard to this. I think it's interesting that NBC and ABC did not carry it on the network, and that CBS broke away from it at one point in the 27 minutes, for whatever reason. It's interesting times.
It really is. And again, I'm old enough to remember when if the president, and I think even I can't remember the name now, but one of the comedians from the blue collar comedy tour, Foxworthy, I think it was, who said, you know, when we were young, you know, if the president was on the television, your evening was shot, because that's what was on television. The president was on all four or five channels, whatever you had in those days. Which, if there's anybody here who's young and I say four or five channels, they're going to be like, what? How that was Stone Age. But yeah, it was the president was always on, and I think that's another challenge we've got, is we have lost the respect for the office. Now, the problem is, you can have disrespect for the person in that office, but that is still the president of the United States. That is still the office, and there should be respect following the office. Now, you and I can talk about respecting the president himself off the air, because I don't know that the language I would use would be suitable, but we've lost, and again, it's not just the president, we've lost a lot of, I think the congressional approval ratings have been in the toilet for years, and somehow we've got to get past these things.
And again, the phone lines are open if you'd like to call in, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Feel free to give us a buzz if there's anything on your mind. Now, the talk all this week, pretty much on this show, when we've had a free moment, or a guest really, has been flock cameras here in Marion. That's a big deal for people right now. Seems to be headed to a point on Monday night during city council committee meetings. What do you make of flock cameras in Marion?
Well, I'm not a huge supporter of the flock cameras. However, what I will say is that I am pretty certain, and I've had colleagues of mine who have done Freedom of Information Act, and they've gotten some information from the city, and I am very certain that our city police here in Marion have not abused the flock cameras in any way. Now, the potential for abuse is certainly there, and I mentioned with you before we got on the air, the city of Columbus, the mayor has done, Mayor Ginther has done an audit, and over the last year, apparently their flock cameras were misused about 15,000 times, and the mayor is definitely making sure he's going to be passing some new ordinances that greatly limit how you can use the flock cameras. But the simple fact is that they are there. They are here. Now, the ones we've got are fairly basic. I mean, they don't pivot. And I was relaying to one person that my wife and I, about every other year, we travel to New Orleans just for a bit of a vacation. And we were staying on Bourbon Street. And I'd looked down at one point, and there was what looked like a flock camera. And I said, okay, well, you know, Bourbon Street's probably a good place to have one, but it turned. And it would just automatically pivot, and it's looking both ways down the street. And I thought to myself, well, ours don't do that. And so there are cameras everywhere, and the concern shouldn't be, you know, we're going to be on camera. The concern needs to be focused on preventing abuse. And again, I don't think we've had any abuse here in Marion. And so, you know, listeners ought to at least take comfort in that. Now, I'm not saying I approve of this flock cameras, and I really don't, because I think it's just a little more of it is a bit of an invasion of privacy. But then again, every one of us carry a camera with us, along with our computer and our data and everything we've got in mobile phones. So the chances that you're not on camera any given day are pretty slim.
But are you surprised that the move is not to put rules on these cameras? The move is to get rid of them.
I think I'm not surprised at that. No, because it's always the easiest thing to do when you're talking about a controversial subject. And you can talk about this in gun controls. The same thing. It's so much more easy for we'll say the anti-gun or the anti-flock camera people. It's much more easy to say, let's get rid of them. That solves the problem. And in some cases, you just can't do that. In the case of guns, obviously, we have the Second Amendment. But in the case of flock cameras, I would like to see some data, and I have not, but I would like to see some data. What good have they done? Okay, everyone's talking about how they can potentially be abused. Okay, but if if we assume right now that our city police are not abusing, which is what I truly do believe that. I don't believe there is abuse. But if what is the concern if we don't have the abuse? Is the concern just the potential for abuse? My concern is, again, with our city finances the way they are, why should we be paying for them?
I don't think we are right now.
And if that's the case, then again, as long as we have plenty of safeguards in place to prevent the abuse, and again, I don't believe there has been any. If someone knows of abuse, then please call in and let us know. But if I understand the concern and the potential for abuse, but again, if there hasn't been abuse and we're not paying for them, and if they have done some good, that's the one question I've got.
Police Chief McDonald on Monday night cited two examples.
Okay.
that it's helped them.
Okay, well then it's helped. I have no problem if they stay, provided we assure the public and have rules in place that prevent any abuse in the future.
What do you think of the argument that comes up that if I'm not doing anything wrong, why do I care? Because that's the argument that gets people angry who don't want them. Because they don't want to, if there is even a chance of surveillance, they don't want that.
I don't know what to think. I mean, it's like there's, people are entitled to some level of privacy in this country. And the simple fact is that we have lost much of it through our own negligence or through our own desire for convenience. I mean, I can remember my first computer. My first computer would sit on this desk and probably break it. It was so heavy. And now I've got, these mobile phones that we carry around. You've got more computing power, in your hand than that was ever on the space shuttle, if you think about it. There's more computer power, and that computer comes with cameras. It comes with microphones. They're all over the place, and we have lost a degree of privacy. And there are people out there that would like a little of it back. And I understand that argument, but to say I don't have anything to worry about, that's when you're trusting that there is no abuse and there's no potential for abuse. Now, me, I would like to see that. I would like to see that put in writing, and I'm not saying we haven't done that here in Marion. And again, want to reiterate to the listeners, I don't believe Marion has abused it. But again, go south to Columbus; there has been some abuse there.
I think it's weighing: will it help us solve crimes versus what privacy do we have to give up for that? Now, some people, I think, believe that even if it did solve crimes, the fact that we do have to give up privacy for it makes it wrong.
Are those the same? I mean, I don't know how you... Yeah, I understand giving up a little privacy there, but we have given up so much privacy. And again, there's very few people have not been on camera every day of their lives. And I understand that concern. I don't see that the flock cameras, and our flock cameras, I think, are focused on license plates. And your license plate is not a private thing. That's something that the government issues, and you put it on your car. That's not private. It really isn't.
And again, if anybody has an opinion or a thought on this, feel free to weigh in, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. How do you think it's going to go? Councilman Rollins called in, says he believes there are 5 votes on city council to get rid of these cameras. Other people feel that legislation will not make it to council, that it'll be changed in committee. Where do you think this is going to go?
I'm willing to wait and see. I'll be honest with you. I think I believe Aaron Rollins has his votes. I'm sure he's talked to enough people. I mean, they talk to each other. I don't think it'll be surprised. I think it's what happens in committee will be interesting. I think I don't know if it's going to be they're going to be removed or they're going to try to beef up. As I said, they're going to maybe try to beef up or put in an ordinance that makes it a crime to use it for any other purpose other than, I don't know if they have to list it, but certainly solving crime. But I have unfortunately not been able to attend the last couple meetings. I've tried to watch them on through Facebook, and the connection is the best.
Do you think it's a good idea to stream these meetings on Facebook? Because it's interesting. I think in the beginning, everybody thought, wow, this is a great idea. People can watch who can't go. But people who can go don't go because they can watch it at home. And if you're not there, you can't ask any questions. True. You can't speak out about anything. I never had a problem with them being made available days after. But I think when you live stream it, it becomes a show. I'm not sure that that's the best thing.
I have not witnessed that, but it is again, there is the potential for that. You're absolutely right. I don't know if Facebook is the best medium to do that with, though. I would prefer it to be live streamed, like on the city's website, because Facebook, there are no safeguards on Facebook, and as you mentioned, you certainly have the potential for. You know, whether there's showboating on the part of one of the council members or the speakers that come up to the podium, there is that potential. But I don't know that there's a wide enough audience for that people are actually going to do that. I would like to think there's a little more that our council's a little better than that.
You know, there were a couple of stories about our governor's race recently. This one during July 4th weekend, following an eventful July 4th weekend featuring energetic stops across Ohio and polls showing the governor's race neck and neck, Dr. Amy Acton appeared on MS Now's The Last Word to discuss her campaign's growing momentum, her historic grassroots support, and her commitment to lower costs for Ohio families. "I'm an Ohio girl through and through. And I spent my 250th in places like Marietta, Ohio, the oldest settlement and the oldest city in our state, Dayton and Athens, Ohio, and you really can't put words to the fact that my opponent literally got on his corporate jet and headed to Paris, not Paris, Ohio, but Paris, France. I've been traveling the state of Ohio now for 2.5 years, going places, quite frankly, Democrats have not been in a while. Listening deeply to the people of Ohio, we see record crowds showing up. 95% of what everyone is talking about, no one would disagree on. It absolutely is the cost of everyday life. Housing is too expensive, rent no one can afford, our electric bills are going up, mine went up $140 last summer, childcare is unaffordable, healthcare costs, we have hospitals closing everywhere. I've spent my life working with whoever wants to solve things, and I can't say this enough. Ohioans are longing for a change, and I can tell you Ohio is absolutely in play. I'm against a self-funding billionaire who is not just out of touch, he is out for himself. But we are outraising him the last 2 quarters. We have tied or are ahead of him in every poll, and it's a people-powered movement. We are going to tell Mr. Ramaswamy in no uncertain terms in November that you can't buy this state, you can't buy Ohio, and you can't buy us." Now, first, I have 2 questions about this. First of all, now this was put out by her campaign. This is a press release, obviously. Mm-hmm. Now, she seems to mention the same things on every show she's on. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. Everybody's got a stump speech. But she's very repetitive in the things that she said. It's glaringly repetitive when she's on these shows.
You're right, and I know that she is, you know, she's hammering away at her opponent, who is, as she mentioned, but it seems like she keeps returning to funding. It's all about money.
But then tells you that she's raised more money.
Yeah. Well,
okay, gotcha.
That's a one and done. Okay, you don't even, and that's one of the things I try not to focus on, and to some detriment to my own campaign, because it's like I have not raised near as much money as my opponent. But the simple fact is that, I mean, we've all been inundated with these begging letters and begging texts, and I mean, I think my phone has gotten more text messages from candidates that I don't even live in their state, and I'm getting text messages. And she has gotten very, very repetitive. She's proud of the fact that Ohioans, that her grassroots campaign is outraising a self-funded billionaire. But yeah, it always seems to come back to that, and she needs to hit the what we call the kitchen table topics a lot more often and a lot wider. I mean, yes, everything she says there is true. We are all suffering. I mean, our property taxes are going up, and Ohio pays one of the highest property tax rates in the country. You know, our, you know, we're not paying. It's not like we don't have any sales tax. We have that as well. So I agree with you. I wish she would broaden her talking points a little bit, and then, you know, you can mention that her grassroots has outraised her opponent, who's a self-funding billionaire. But just do it once. We're good.
But why does she keep saying things like she goes to places where Democrats have not been? I mean, is that really the truth? Haven't seen her here.
Well, we do have. I will say that the Democratic Party is having a picnic, and we've got her lieutenant governor.
But not her. Be there. She says she goes there.
Well, I know. I understand that.
But she says that a lot.
Well, she's going to places the Democrats don't usually go to, but she's not coming here. And I wish. And again, I've sent emails to her campaign. I've sent emails to her campaign. I guess her scheduler, and I've never heard back.
But and then she keeps saying she's not a partisan. Now, okay, I guess what you're saying, but you know, somebody said the other day they did not like the idea that she said she would put a Republican in her cabinet. That she says all the time she's not a partisan. That's one of her talking points. And she says she's going to places Democrats haven't been. Well, gubernatorial candidates have been here before in Marion. I don't know why. Is she happy to be a Democrat? I mean, I've never heard her say that. I've never heard her say anything. I don't see Democratic Party in her press releases.
I can't comment on that. I haven't spoken to her. I did meet her briefly.
But what does she's not a partisan mean?
I don't know, to be honest with you. Here's what I'll say is I'm a Democrat. Now, it isn't on my sign, but I am a Democrat. But what I will say is if elected, I'm representing everyone in my district. I'm not just representing the people that voted for me. That's what we're supposed to do.
Well, and before we get to Ramaswamy here, because he released a press release as well, but why does it matter that Ramaswamy spent time in Paris? I guess I don't get that. That's what she leads with in this.
It's an optics thing that she wants to bring to everyone's attention. It's like while she's spending the 4th of July here in Ohio in the good old USA.
She says, I'm an Ohio girl through and through. Okay.
There you go. Well, Vivek Ramaswamy is...
from Cincinnati. I think that's in Ohio.
Kentucky sometimes claims it, but yeah, it is. But I don't know where he lives. Someone told me he lives in Texas now.
No, I think he's in Columbus.
Is he back in Columbus? Yeah. I know that's where he parks his plane.
Well, see, now that plane thing, too. That really gets under people's skin. They like to bring that up a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's like, well, I mean, okay, hey, if you could afford a private jet, wouldn't you have one?
I mean, I don't know. The man's a billionaire. I don't know. If he wanted to go to Paris... how does that make him a bad governor? I guess that's what I'm looking at here. How does this... tell me why he'll be a bad governor and you'll be a good one. Him going to Paris doesn't disqualify him from being a bad governor. From being a good governor, excuse me.
It shouldn't, no. But again, it's one of those optic thing. I mean, you know, and again, she's talking about all the places she goes to in Ohio. I don't know if Ramaswamy's done the same. Has he blanketed
the state?
He's
been to Marion.
I know. Yeah, but I knew he'd been to Marion, but again, you know, we got Marion in Ohio, and she's not saying she's been to Marion, obviously.
No, she can't say that.
No. So, but going back to your point on she wants to be nonpartisan. I think that when in office, you've got to at least listen to the opponents.
Now, Mr. Ramaswamy, Republican nominee for Ohio Governor Vivek Ramaswamy and his running mate, Ohio Senate President Rob McCauley, released the following statements reacting to CNBC naming Ohio as the top state in the country for business. When Democrats last held the governor's office and controlled the Ohio House in 2010, Ohio ranked 34th for business. After years of progress made under conservative Republican leadership, liberal Amy Acton's big government proposals would take our state backwards. congrats to Ohio's leaders, including my running mate, for bringing an economic wave to our state. It's the beginning of a new dawn, and I'll ensure it translates to high-paying jobs and wealth creation in every part of Ohio. It's also worth noting that we surpassed states like Virginia and North Carolina over the last year, which floundered due to anti-business policies from newly elected Democrat governors. We cannot let that happen in Ohio. Vivek Ramaswamy said that. The last time Ohio had a Democrat governor and Democrat controlled half the legislature, we were number 34. Since then, Republican leadership's commitment to drastically cutting taxes and eliminating regulatory tape has made Ohio a place where its businesses and citizens alike know they can grow and thrive, and we're not done yet. Rob McCulley. There you go.
Isn't that lovely?
Well, what do you make of that?
Well, given that our taxes have gone up, you know, property taxes have gone up since, for the last 16 years, since the Republicans sort of took over the state. I don't know. I mean, first off, North Carolina, if memory serves, has a Republican governor. I'm not sure where. I know Virginia has a Democrat, but North Carolina has a Republican governor. So I kind of question. Now, I may be wrong there. I haven't been to North Carolina in a while, but.
He said newly elected Democrat governors.
Well, if they just were elected this past year, you can't blame them for what's happened in the state at that much.
Well, maybe he's saying they're going to start going down.
Oh, well.
Because of, we can't let that happen here, I think is what he was saying. I guess. What I don't understand about this is DeWine's the governor, and he doesn't seem to be too cushy with him.
I don't know who he's cushy with in town other than the guy who's running his running mate. I hear a lot of that, and it's kind of like, okay, but we're talking about, you know, the one thing we've got to understand as voters is we've got to understand that circumstances change. The business can thrive for many, multiple reasons. But one of the things that nobody has ever talked to me about, and I do a lot of in-person, there to listen. I don't do stump speeches. I try not to do speeches at all. But the one thing no one has ever talked about to me is why our state needs to be better or why businesses are struggling in the state. People are struggling in the state. And he can say whatever he says there about businesses, although some of it I disagree with, but if he talks about how taxes are low and how taxes have come down, maybe he needs to start paying taxes more and figure that out.
Apparently CNBC is the one who named Ohio the top state in the country for business.
I'd have to see the article to know how they rated it that way. I do know that one of the challenges under some of the environmental legislation, which obviously directly affects my job, a lot of those have been, shall we say, weakened as a result of Republican policies. Now, you can say, well, that's good, then that's less government interference. But one of the problems that people think about, free enterprise is set up by the government. Free enterprise is not just let the businesses go out and do whatever they want. We have to, capitalism is only works for the people when it's well-regulated. Now, I'm not saying I'm for onerous regulations, but to say, oh, well, we're going to cut all the regulations, it's like, well, no, we want to keep businesses here, but we don't want to keep them here for, you know, they can destroy the roads, they get all the tax abatements, so they get whoever jobs they bring in, but the businesses themselves often don't pay taxes. Now, whether that's good for business in the long run, I don't think so. I think we need businesses that like to they want good infrastructure. They want good schools. They want good roads. They want good bridges. And if we're not getting taxes in and we're not spending the money wisely, then you're not going to have those things.
Now, I interviewed Senator McCulley at the fair, and I said, is it still good to be endorsed by Donald Trump in Ohio? He said, yes. Is it?
I'm not looking for his endorsement, I'll tell you that right now.
Well, I don't think a Democrat would want his endorsement. But is it still good to have, if you're a Republican? I mean, certainly he put Bernie Moreno over the top, I think a lot of people would say. And I think people would also say that he certainly helped Who's the other? I can't remember the other.
Husted was appointed.
J.D. Vance. I think you certainly helped Vance.
Yeah. But I think, I'll be honest with you, if I were a Republican, I would absolutely say that my presidential endorsement was great. I don't think it is right now. His popularity is at it's close to its all-time low, if it is not past it. We're still at war with Iran. Our gas prices are going right back up over $4. I mean, I think I saw $3.99 at the Moto down the road. And I don't know if it moves the needle. I'm not going to say a Trump endorsement. It would be that every Republican voter would say, "Oh no, I'm going the other way." But I don't know that it's going to sway much. And in Ohio, the candidates live and die not by the base vote. They live and die by the independent vote.
You know? Is this good news for Mike DeWine? I mean, you know, here's a guy who's defending the Haitians being in Springfield. Here's a guy who has went on record as the first governor in office to say abolish the death penalty. Here's a guy who gets a good report from CNBC. I mean, he's in office. Vivek Ramaswamy is not, saying that Ohio's number one, the top state for business in the country. Here's a guy who is really in his last year doing a lot of stuff. I don't know. Is this good for DeWine?
Well, I think if you look at the CNBC report, yeah, that speaks well of him.
Why do more people not want to be endorsed by him, the sitting two-term, long-time politician? I don't think Republicans would stand next to the man at this particular point.
I don't know. Some of it might have been his, because especially during the pandemic, he certainly did not take what the president was saying to heart as far as some of the nonsense that Trump was spouting about the pandemic. I think DeWine took a more mature, more measured approach to how we fought the pandemic. But I think a lot of that is still kind of, and again, you also have the fact that his own legislature basically voted to reduce his authority. I mean, which he, of course, vetoed, and they overrode the veto. So I don't know, and again, I'm not a big one for popularity contests, I mean, which is strange to hear from a guy running for office, but I don't know how that the popularity swings one way or the other.
The guest tonight is Democratic candidate in the 86th district race coming up this fall, Kent Halloran. We're going to take a short break here on WGH Radio. Come back, go get some cheese dip or whatever you do. Listen to the news, the weather, have some fun. Don't go outside and get choked by the smoke. It is still pretty rough out there, and I'm not sure if it's still raining or not. But on top of all that, the rain was coming down when the show started. We'll be back right after this. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Talking Place. The legendary star of The Facts of Life, Charlotte Ray, Mrs. Garrett.